Firstly, I'd like to just begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land in which we're podcasting today. I'd like to pay my respects and honour elders past, present and emerging.
Today, I am very, very lucky to be interviewing someone that I've known for quite a few years and looked up to, definitely. I would have loved to have played under you, absolutely. I think you're an incredible coach. Mike Tebow, the most winningest coach in the WNBA history. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to do it. Glad to be here. Nice to be in Australia.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you're here too, because, you know, it's just nice having you out here, and I feel like I played better because you were sitting courtside the other night. So,
Well, if I can convince you to come play another year, that'd be great too. So.
not a chance in hell, my friend. Not a chance in hell. Look, I'm just going to ask you some questions. We've got some questions from the crowd as well, because we're not doing this live, obviously. So I just want to know, first up, what was your pathway into the WNBA? Like, were you coaching at college, in the ABA? Like, what was your pathway?
So I was an NBA coach right before I went to the WNBA. I was with the Milwaukee Bucks. I've been with the Lakers and the Bulls and a little bit with Seattle. I had coached in what was the CBA, which is now the G League, also for the NBA. So my background was on the men's side primarily. And I had a lot of friends in the W who said, you ought to try it. You'll really like it. I had been going back and forth about what my career in the NBA looked long term. I wasn't a former player in the NBA, so as an assistant coach, I could have stayed kind of in that role for a long time, but it was an opportunity to be a head coach. My daughter was young at the time. I think she was in fifth or sixth grade and kept saying, "Hey, Dad, we need more coaches on the women's game who will give everything they have to it." And so it was kind of a, the right time, right place. And so I took the job in Connecticut. And kind of in the back of my mind said, well, if this doesn't work, I'll go back to the NBA and go back to being an assistant. And I fell in love with it. And I've had, I don't know, four or five chances to go back, and I've never done it. I liked what I was doing. I loved the players I was coaching. And it turned out to be a great thing for my family life. For us, playing in the summer, your winter, but our summer, I got to watch my kids grow up more than I would have if I had stayed in the NBA, probably too. So those were kind of the things that brought it all together. Jumped in, loved it, got my butt beat by you in the finals my second year, and here we are.
Yeah, sorry about that. Betty Lennox is sorry as well. She was pretty fantastic. She was brilliant. So I guess just off the back of that, what are some of the differences coaching men's professional basketball to women's? Like, what were some of the things that you sort of noticed?
I approached it having kind of talked, excuse me, talked to people who had done both. And basically, the best advice I got was just go coach everybody like you would, regardless of whether they were male or female. And I think that's the way it should be. There are obviously differences. I mean, I'm not throwing lob plays for dunks out of timeouts. So I'm not doing those sorts of things. But the game to me was pure. It was, I thought our players were coachable, but I treated my WNBA players in Connecticut as if they were an NBA team. I wanted them to see themselves as the best players in the world, and coach them like that. Let them be adults, but understand that, we were kind of in it together. I think that's been my coaching philosophy, no matter where I've been, is that your best players need to be your best leaders and allow them to do that and be kind of co-captains in that regard, as far as, knowing how your team should play and how they conduct themselves. And so I've always felt you'll never reach your potential anyway, unless your best players are your best player leaders and workers. And that's how I approached it. So, the differences were more some little emotional things. I'll tell a funny story. My wife kids me about it. I used to say, well, if I told my players in the NBA that, it's Monday morning, I said on Thursday, at 10 o'clock, we're going to do this. And for some reason, I didn't do it or change it. Guys would go, eh, he changed. I would have had players on my Connecticut team say, hey, you said on Monday at 10 o'clock that today we were going to do this at this time. Why didn't you do it? It was those kinds of things. I thought that our teams in the W really wanted to be more of a family, that was necessary for connections. In the NBA, I think because you have so many different people with people surrounding them, family and agents and, you know, marketing people and everything else, it's harder to get that. But I've always felt that our best teams were ones that could really connect with each other. They don't have to be best friends off the court or anything, but they have to have a connection that they really depend on each other. And I think that's true of any good team, male or female, but I think it felt more important in our league to have that kind of connection. I don't know if that was your sense playing, but it certainly felt that way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think women, you're right about the on schedule. I'd be exactly the same. Like you said, and we're here and you're not doing it. Like, do what you say. Like, you know, that's me for sure. I guess, how has your coaching technique changed over the years? So the generations have changed. The athletes are different now, absolutely. And I mean, I've got to experience it firsthand being very old and coming back. But what's changed in your opinion? And has that changed the way that people coach or you coach?
I think it's changed both for good and bad. I think there's really good things. I think the players, I think you were ahead of your time. And I mean that with the highest compliment, because you were a prototype player for somebody that was just developing in our league as a post player who could handle the ball, who could play on the perimeter, who could shoot threes. I think that part, both the men's and women's game, has changed dramatically. And I think in our league, the star players in many ways are those kind of players. You know, you were kind of the forefront of it. You have, you know, now in the league, Stewie and Asia Wilson, Elena Deladon, and players like that who are very versatile. The NBA has the same kind of players, you know, Giannis and LeBron and those kind of players who could do more things. I think the game has changed that way. It's more athletic in the W now. It's bigger, faster, stronger. When I came in the league, you and Lisa Leslie were kind of the big post players in the league. But a lot of post players who played the five were 6'2", 6'3". Mm. Now the game has changed where we're seeing, you know, ball handling 6'6", 6'7" players in our league, and that's only going to continue. So I think those are the good things in the league. I don't know if the, I don't even know what the right word is. I don't want to use the word smarts because that's not true. But I think that the game has changed because I think there are less young players coming in who watch other people play enough. I think that the biggest difference in all of sports in the last 20 years is social media. And so I think that we are finding players coming who have a lot of other interests. I don't know if as many players, you know, if I came into practice tomorrow and asked how many people watch games the night before, I'm not sure it would be the same as maybe players when I first came in the league. There's other things for them to do. They spend hours on their phone or on, you know, an iPad or doing those things. So I think that's changed the game. I think it's changed how we communicate with players. There's less face-to-face talking in all of life, but it shows up in sports sometimes. You know, the daily connection is a little bit different. So I think that's changed the game. I think it's changed relationships. I laugh. I watch people sitting on the bus, and people in the front of the bus are texting people in the back of the bus rather than having a conversation with them. And we all
that's
do
right.
it to an extent, but it has changed the game. And I think the other thing is because of social media and every kind of sports outlet that there is that we have instant access to everything. We know something that's happened all the way across the world within a minute of it happening. And so it's changed our perception about, you know, how we do things or how we interact with people. And it's just different. It feels different. I used to think that when I first came in the league, there was maybe a 7 to 8 year difference in kind of what I'll call basketball generations of players coming in. You could relate to me. I now have players who are 27 and 28 who are having a hard time relating to college players coming in the league because they've grown up differently. They've played the game, you know, through the AAU system or through in the United States, instead of just kind of learning how to play. But it's just different. You know, they most of the college kids coming in now, in many ways, are spoiled and haven't had to deal with real life issues. They've kind of had somebody hold their hand for them as they went through college and scheduled everything in their life for them. So now they come into our league and they have all this free time. They're not going to classes. Now they have to learn how to be a real adult.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. I guess on the back of that, then how would you approach sort of, it's interesting because once they come into pros, you expect that the development side has been done. Do you still see a space? Because I'll just go back to 2003, 2004, when Ann Donovan came in and became a head coach for Seattle. She took my game to a whole nother level because she invested in time with me doing one-on-one stuff. And people were like, oh, that's, you know, you're not meant to do that in pros. You're already meant to have had that to your game. But I mean, look, I was like 21 years old at that point too. I was still a baby. But how do you see development of the players in pros? Is that something that you sort of really try to foster and develop, even though they should have done that work, or technically should have done that work?
Well, first of all, they haven't done it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, college coaches are a little bit hamstrung about the number of hours they can spend with players in the U.S. I find, I'll go on a side here first, is that I find players coming from other countries in many ways have better basketball habits. You know, they've grown up a little bit differently. I think of some of the players I've coached coming from Europe, and they weren't put in a box when they were young. So somebody like an Emma Mieseman, who I coached, is, you know, one of the best players in the world right now. She didn't grow up somebody telling her, well, you're just going to play with your back to the basket and you're a post player. She grew up learning how to pass and how to put the ball on the floor and how to face up and have nice touch. So I'm a little more spoiled when I get those players than some of the ones I'm getting otherwise. But I think that player development is going to go on. I mean, we still have players in our 30s that are, you know, still working hard on their game.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of investment of time and money and energy into player development. We have certain coaches on our staff, that's their specialty, and we spend a ton of time. I have a guy named Sefu Bernard on our staff who is a former NBA development coach who, you know, heads that up. And even though I'm not coaching, you know, day to day now, and I'm the GM, I still meet with our staff once a week just about player development.
And that's awesome.
We go through every one of our players and say, okay, where are we with each player? We don't try to give them 50 things to do. Let's pick two or three things that we think they need, and then sit down with them and make sure that they think that that's what they need too. Get their input and focus our player development. I tell our staff all the time that if I had to choose between X and O preparation or player development, I'll always choose player development, because you can overcome some of the other stuff as long as you're getting better at something every day. One of our mantras with our players is, when you walk in the gym, make sure that when you walk out, you're a little bit better that day. Whatever you did that day, be a little bit better. You don't have to be 100% better at anything. Just be a little bit better. And if everybody on your team is doing that, if everybody on your team got 1% better every month, think about what that would be like by the end of a season for a team. And so player development is at the top of our list. And it doesn't matter whether you're a rookie coming in at 21 or if you're a 34-year-old veteran and you can add something to your game. If you don't think you can, then you're not going to grow. I mean, I've watched you over the course of 20 plus years and still doing things that, you know, you didn't do when you were younger. It's huge.
Yeah, it's good too that there's that level of accountability as well. Like, you as a GM are having those meetings with the coaches. I think that's definitely something that a lot of coaches here could be thinking about, and or GMs and you know, operational staff. So yeah, that's a great point.
And we literally track that. I mean, we keep extensive notes on each player, and we say, okay, at this point, you know, it's June 1st. Where are we? And on July 1st, have we met any of our goals, or are we seeing progress? So
that's,
I mean,
awesome.
I just think that's important.
That is a little bit of gold right there. What do you look for when you're, I mean, this is sort of along the same lines, but like in terms of recruiting players, what do you look for? And I bet I know one: work ethic.
Yes. we can go there right away. And you know, and we were talking a little bit the other day. I mean, I don't expect all young players to have that down yet, but I want to know that they're starting to figure that out. I think a habit of a lot of people, whether they're fans or anybody else, is they watch the games and say, okay, I like this player because, and they, you know, you can see obvious talent in a game. I like to go watch practices. I want to know how attentive a player is. Are they, you know, competing in every drill? Are they, you know, figuring out that, you know, this isn't working, I got to get a little better at this. Am I open to being coached by, whether it's the head coach or the assistant coach? Am I listening? I like to go to practice the day before a game when people are working on game plans and see what players can carry it over from the day before into the actual game, and if they, you know, have retained what they're supposed to do, how hard they compete. You know, it's funny. I'll go back to when I was in the NBA, Michael Jordan, everybody said, oh, that was an easy pick. You know, we had the third pick of the draft and we took him. Well, it wasn't as easy. We had people in our organization that weren't sure we needed him, or that he was. And I was very lucky. I got to see Michael probably practice as many times as I saw him play in games. And you got to see him do things that you didn't see in games. He played at North Carolina, was a very unselfish. Everybody gets 15, 16 points. And if I hadn't gone to all those practices, I wouldn't have seen some of the things that I said, oh, my God, this is going to be so much more special and different when he gets to our level. So that's part of it. And the work ethic is where you have to start. And coachability.
Coachability, it's a big one. Yeah, that's amazing. Gosh, I've got so many questions here. What are your great habits versus your bad habits? And I mean, that's an interesting question. I might change it. I'm actually not going to say that. How could we word that better, Sam? Okay, let's talk something else. Let's just talk about, I've got it.
You got it?
That's a bad question. Yeah, I've got it. What sort of lessons, I suppose, did you have shaped your coaching, well, had shaped your coaching style before you became a GM? Like what experiences changed the way that you sort of saw the game and coached these athletes?
That's a great question. I think there's several. So when I mean, I'm really old. So now I can go back and refer to people that young people here might not even know of. But one of my early mentors was John Wooden, who was the coach at UCLA with all the championships. And I was a young coach and I got to spend time with him. I worked his camp every summer. And one of the things that I always took away from him is that he was a back to basics fundamentals kind of coach that, you know, you can have all these X's and O's you want to do. And it goes back to a little bit about player development, but you have to keep going back to basic fundamentals to maintain your kind of core base of what you are as a player and what you are as a team. So I think that was one of the first things, is that, you know, you got to keep some things simple, or you got to keep going back to the foundational things before you can add some other things to a player's game or to your team's game. I think that was the first thing. I think the second thing was you learn, sometimes it's the hard way and sometimes it was a little bit the hard way for me, but trying to figure out, you know, who I was as a coach. And so I don't think you can watch other coaches and be them. You have to adjust things you learn from other coaches to your own personality. When I was first starting coaching, the most famous popular coach besides Coach Wooden was Bobby Knight at Indiana. And Bobby Knight is a screamer or a chair thrower, you know, the whole bit. And I saw a lot of young coaches, you know, try to emulate Bobby Knight because he could get away with those things or he could do it. Most of us aren't Bobby Knight. Most of us aren't John Wooden. I'm Mike Tebow. I'm not anybody else. And so I had to learn what things fit me. I think that the hardest thing for me, you asked about, you know, things that were hard. I mean, patience is one. I think it's a good virtue and a bad virtue for me sometimes. I lack patience at times because I just want to go. And
yeah.
I had to learn to kind of slow down and you know, there's things you got to just take steps in the right order. You can't skip steps. as a person, as a coach. You can't skip steps with your team. And so I think that was part of what I had to learn is, you know, kind of to stay on topic about things. I think that I didn't really have to learn this because it's how I grew up. But I think that the best coaches are the ones that can be really honest with their players. And my wife would say sometimes I'm honest to a fault, in the sense that, you know, I don't want there to be much ambiguity about what I'm telling you. If I thought that Lauren Jackson needed to do this or would be a better teammate by doing this, players know if you're BSing them. And so I think you need to be direct. And I think players appreciate it. They may not want to hear it sometimes at the time you're saying it, but I think the great players will take it back and mull it over and say, okay, you know, or come back and ask by, you know, what did you mean by that? I don't think you have to be rude. I don't think you have to, but I don't think you have to over sugarcoat things. I think you have to let your players know that you have their genuine interests at heart, that you're going to coach them from that viewpoint and no other, you know, to get ahead. I always laugh when, you know, I think about high school kids or college coaches, college kids whose parents say, oh, my son or daughter doesn't play because the coach doesn't like them. I'm sorry, but most coaches, you wouldn't be on the team if they didn't like you. Now it's up to how you earn things. Most coaches want to win games just as much as anybody else. So they're not going to not play somebody because they don't like them. I think that there's things you might not like about an individual player, but those are the things you try to deal with honestly. And I think that over the course of time, I think most players would tell you that if nothing else that played for me, that I was honest with them about who they are, what they can do. And I think that's, you know, a big learning step for everybody.
Yeah. Awesome. Your most memorable coaching moment.
Ooh, boy. I got quite a few. Wow. You know, you take Olympic stuff, you take WNBA stuff, NBA stuff. I've learned not to take any of it for granted. You know, I was part of an NBA championship 1980 and in 82. And I was a young coach. When I first went to the NBA, I was 29 years old as an assistant coach. So I was the youngest coach in the league. And we won a couple championships in 3 years. And I thought, oh, man, this is easy. You know, it's exciting. You're winning. And then it doesn't happen for a while. And so I think I've learned to appreciate. I think this is going to sound a little sappy, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think all the wins of championships are great. The most memorable championship, though, was in Washington a couple years ago in 2019, partly because I hadn't won a championship, but partly because when I took the job there, that team was at the lowest point you could be. The fans weren't coming to the games. They were awful. They had gone 5-29 and 6-28, and the fans were dying for something good. And they had a pretty loyal fan base. And with about a minute to go in the game, right before we won the championship, I looked in the stands around me, and there were people, there were fans who had been there the entire time, the Washington, and they were crying. And it was like, it got me emotional. I'm emotional almost thinking about it, just watching those fans. And so that was a great moment. But I had another different kind of moment, and it was somebody you played against, but I'll just tell the story. So when I was in Washington, one of my first couple of years, one of our players asked me, you know, when I'm done, what did I want to have be thought of me, or what the legacy was, or why, what was my motivation for that long? And I said to them, I'll tell the same story that I'm telling you. So I had said to my team in Connecticut early on, one of the first years, it may be even when we had lost the championship to you guys, but we had a team meeting and I talked about, I hope that someday when you're retired as a player to our team, that you can look back 10 years after you're done, be sitting on your back porch and think, man, I had a great experience with that coach and with that team. That I learned, that I enjoyed my teammates, and that was one of the best times of my life. So I'm sitting in my office in Connecticut, I mean in Washington, about 5 or 6 years ago, and I get a phone call from somebody who played for me and played with you for a year, I think. And this person called me, she goes, "Coach, I am sitting on my back porch, just like you said, and I'm reflecting back that I thought I needed to call you and tell you what a great experience that was." That made me, you know, it's one of those things as a coach that you say, okay, maybe we're making a dent, you know, that you're having an impact on somebody's life. And that was one of the best phone calls I had gotten, because maybe, you know, those things have sunk in a little bit.
Yeah. Can I guess who that was?
Sure.
I guess. Was that Lacoe?
No, it wasn't, but I've had a similar conversation with Lacoe since then. It was Wendy Palmer.
Oh, Wendy. I love Wendy Palmer. Yeah. Gee, I love her.
Lacoe and I had a conversation similar to that about a year ago.
Yeah. Look, just some beautiful people as well. I think that's one thing that I've loved about my time in America, was just the personalities and the people that you meet, because it does. It really makes an impact on your life. And I've been out of it for so long now, but those girls, some of my best friends still.
Yep.
Special. Well, that's beautiful. What changes do you hope to see in the WNBA in the next 5 years?
More money for players. I'll say that.
Yeah.
The players want charters, and I think that, you know, has to come at some point. But I mean, I think that, you know, those are just normal things. Everybody wants that. I think the league office wants it. You know, I'm not sitting here commenting on something that, you know, nobody does. We'll see what happens in collective bargaining agreement. I try to stay out of that stuff.
I
hope that, you know, the game keeps expanding to reach more people, reach more markets. I hope that we can do some things globally a little bit more with the league. It would be wonderful at some point if, you know, we could have teams coming to Australia or to France or Spain or somewhere to play some international games. You know, I think that would be great. You know, I just think that we all talk about how women's sports is, you know, taking off and everything else, but I would like to see more people who like to talk about that, but put up their money.
Yeah, no, I hear
you know,
that.
It's like,
yeah,
put up or shut up. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, people want to jump on the bandwagon when things are going well, but, you know, it's like the person who says, I really want to help, you know, support women's sports, and I want the WNBA to succeed, and then ask you for 10 free tickets. You know, I mean, how do we pay our players more money if people aren't willing to buy tickets like they would for anything else? So I would like to see kind of more, not just giving lip service to things, but people actually taking, you know, part in making it work.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, on that one, what role do you believe coaches play in advocating for gender equality and diversity in our sport?
Well, I hope I'm a good example a little bit. I think that I think coaches play a huge role. I think that they're the day-to-day contact for a young person. They're a role model first. They're a teacher second. I think that teaching is not just the X's and O's, but it's setting an example as a role model. It's back to what I said about being honest. I think, you know, I'm not the most religious person, but I think you have to be one of those people that, number one, you practice what you preach, and that you, I kind of go by the golden rule that I want to treat people like I'd like to be treated. And I think that, you know, that's how you should look at coaching too, is that, you know, I want players to be coached like I would like to be coached. You know, somebody who has my best interest at heart, that's smart enough. I mean, we've talked around about all the you know, the philosophical stuff, but you still got to have a great knowledge of the game. And I think that, you know, if you're a young coach, and how you can be advocating for players is make sure you're the most prepared coach every day. You know, that so that your players aren't being cheated out of a great experience. If you think you know it all as a young coach, then you're not going to ever be a great coach, because I'm 73 years old and I still read articles and watch other coaches and try to steal ideas. Even though I might not coach another game besides USAB, I still feel like I got to learn. And I think that you can advocate for players by doing your job every day. You know, being a great coach, knowing what you're supposed to know when you walk in the gym. You know, if you're a classroom teacher, you can't fool people. You got to know your stuff. And I think mm-hmm. coaches have to be the same way.
Well, I mean, one of the last questions I did have for you was, what advice do you have for aspiring coaches? And I think that pretty much covered it off. I think continue learning and, yeah, what you were saying about being young. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think players appreciate a genuine person. I don't think, you know, I think the last thing about young coaches is it's not about you. It's about your players. I mean, it's true at every level. You can be a really smart coach, but if you need to have good players, and in order to have good players, you need to get the right ones. You need to teach them the right way. You need to set expectations. I think the hardest thing right now in coaching or anything else is that we have a society, you asked earlier about what's changed, is that we have a blame society in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, people need to take ownership. You know, we see all the time now, kids get in trouble at school or doesn't do the right thing, and the parent is going to blame everybody but their kid. We got to all take accountability for what we do. And I think that, you know, that would be one of my things for young coaches, is that, you know, you're going to ask for accountability, make sure you're accountable. And then, you know, if you have standards, don't compromise your standards. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the hardest thing right now is to not compromise what you believe in, for the sake of, you know, expediency or everybody just kind of getting through the day. The best coaches I still watch are the ones that set a standard and expect it and don't let people, you know, slide from it. I think that, you know, that's one of the biggest evaluations we've been going through in our own organization this offseason is are we holding ourselves to the standards we believe in? And I think that's where you know, we had to do a self-check on that.
Yeah. You did touch on then just players and different personalities, but I think for you, this is another technical question, but, you know, obviously athletes are different, right? And different things motivate them. For me, I had a coach, you would know Tom Maher, right? Mm-hmm. He was a tough coach, you know, he was... Yep. You know, he had a tongue on him, that's for sure. But he was tough. And, you know, for me, that was what I needed. I had an authoritarian father, and to have a man yelling at me, it was like, good, okay, yep, I'll go and play. Like, great, challenge me, do it. So that really, you know, really motivated me as an athlete. And I think a lot of my coaches were pretty, you know, they knew that they could motivate me like that by being harsh. A lot of other athletes can't deal with that sort of motivation. Right. How quickly does that sort of stand out? Like, how do you motivate athletes differently? Like, and what are your sort of techniques in trying to get to know the athletes well enough to understand how to motivate them?
That's a hard answer in a short amount of time, because I think to your point right there, you have to learn your athlete. First of all, I think you have to learn how they learn too. Mm. Everybody learns differently. You know, some people are visual learners. Some are, I got to walk through it and do it. Others are, I can look at a piece of paper and look at the page and I get it. You know, same way in the classroom. So I think the first thing you got to do is learn how your players learn. You know, what gets through to them, what makes sense to them. I think the second part is, you know, it's pretty heart-to-heart conversations trying to figure out what makes them tick, you know. To your point, sometimes, you know, you just have to ask, you know, am I helping you by teaching you this way? Or is there another way that you're going to learn? And then explaining players too, that when I get on you about some things, I mean, this is never going to be personal. I think that's one of the hardest things right now, is that people taking coaching taking coaching as criticism in a very negative way. There's a big difference. You know, you have to, as a great athlete, learn to be coached. You don't have to be beat up. And I think that, you know, finding a common ground with players about that. There are some players, maybe you'll never get to that point. But I think that that's an honest conversation. Again, I mean, you know, I don't know how many times it comes up in my theme about coaching, even when I talk about it daily, is that I have a hard time when players can't be honest back with me. And I know it's hard. you know, you asked about some differences between coaching men and women. I think one of the biggest differences I've actually had, the more I think about it, is I think a lot more women players have a harder time with conflict. You know, and it's part of society too. You know, everybody wants to be liked. We all want to be liked. But there's a difference between being liked and respected sometimes. And I think that, you know, if you really want to be a good player, that you have to accept that. And that's just a kind of go through it process between a coach and an athlete sometimes and figure it out. That's not a simple answer one. I don't have the simple answer to that, but I think I'm more disappointed when a player who is unhappy about something or doesn't understand something starts harboring those feelings and can't come and have a discussion. That's one of my biggest disappointments. I think one of my strengths is being able to have my door open and have somebody come in and talk about something. And when they don't, it's bothersome to me because I don't think, I mean, it may be a weakness, but I don't think I'm a judgmental person, you know, over the long haul. I may have individual judgments about something that happened that day. And so I think that's a real key for any teacher or coach going forward.
Well, that's all I have on my questions list. But I have to say, look, you're someone that I deeply respect and look up to. And I think some of the things that you've touched on today are things that no other coaches have said in our chats around this stuff. And it's been really quite insightful. So thank you very much. I've never heard one negative thing about you ever. From any of your athletes anywhere around the traps. Like, it's just incredible. So I feel really privileged that we've been able to interview you and I guess have some of our young female coaches in particular in Australia listen to you. I think it's really important just being able to share that knowledge. So thank you very much, Mike. You're a legend.
You're the legend. I tried to come all the way to Russia and convince you to come back.
It was just a bad year for me. Maybe you should have come a different year. But no, I honestly, I would have loved to have played under you. Like I said, I've heard nothing but just raving good things. And I think that's very rare in basketball. So congratulations for everything that you've achieved. But thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right. Sounds good.